What if everything you believed about love was backwards? Not wrong exactly, but inverted, like reading a map upside down and wondering why you keep getting lost. We chase love as if it's something to capture, a treasure at the end of a difficult quest. We wait to feel worthy before we dare to love ourselves. We believe we need to be fixed, perfected, or fundamentally transformed before we deserve connection. But what if love isn't a destination or a feeling at all? What if it's a practice, a choice we make moment by moment, starting not with finding the right person, but with befriending ourselves exactly as we are right now? Here's the truth that cuts through every self-help cliche. You don't need to earn your worthiness. You already have it, simply by existing. Yet most of us carry an internal broadcast system running 24/7, narrating our inadequacies. Elliot absorbed his father's contempt for emotions until his marriage nearly collapsed. Others internalize messages about being the wrong gender, ethnicity, or orientation. James Baldwin described years of vomiting up all the filth I'd been taught about myself before he could walk the earth feeling he had a right to be here. Our brains aren't helping. Evolution gifted us a negativity bias. We remember threats more vividly than pleasures, a survival mechanism now working against us. Add modern culture's obsession with competition and status, and we're trapped in endless comparisons. Scroll through social media for 5 minutes and watch contentment transform into jealousy. We carry stories we've told ourselves for decades. Maybe at 8, you decided you weren't smart enough, or at 15, that you'd never be loved. These narratives often begin with a single incident. One dog bite creates a lifelong fear of all dogs and become themes we repeat without questioning. Sometimes these stories aren't even ours. Epigenetics research shows Holocaust survivors' children are 3 times more likely to develop PTSD. Ancestral pain can shape our nervous systems before birth. Your inner critic speaks in absolutes, should, always, never, and fears that without its harassment, you'll become lazy. But research shows self-criticism initially feels motivating, yet ultimately depletes energy, leaving us frozen. Rather than violently silencing the critic, try a gentler approach. Offer it tea and suggest a nap. Personifying the critic diminishes its power, changing our relationship to negative thoughts. Self-criticism triggers fight-or-flight responses, while self-compassion releases oxytocin, creating trust and safety. Real self-love means embracing every aspect of experience, the good, bad, difficult, and shameful. Without integrating our full emotional range, we risk feeling like imposters. Mindfulness doesn't offer escape from difficult emotions, but teaches us to hold them with awareness and balance. Research shows that emotion diversity, experiencing the full spectrum of emotions, contributes to well-being, yet we're conditioned to avoid grief while chasing only happiness. Complex emotions may take years to surface. It took Barbara Graham 30 years to recognize her experience with a camp counselor as sexual abuse, and another decade to stop blaming herself. When understanding finally came, previously undetected grief and rage emerged from beneath shame and numbness. Progress doesn't mean negative emotions disappear. It means they become transparent rather than solid as steel. Perfectionism generates anxiety because achieving unwavering standards means we're always under threat, focused on avoiding failure. The illusion is that with superior self-control, we can sustain a perfect life. But this is impossible. One teacher's breakthrough came when she shifted her intention from self-protection to sharing what she had to offer. Witnessing the Dalai Lama cheerfully admit a mistake while teaching reinforced this lesson. His comfort with imperfection amplified the love in the room. The wholesome pursuit of excellence feels quite different from perfectionism. When we approach challenges acknowledging what we don't know and can't control, we maintain energy for the quest. Most of us live disconnected from our bodies, treating them like hostile strangers. Yet re-engaging with our physical selves is profoundly healing. Our bodies never lie. Stomachs are called our second brains for a reason. Consider this. Every atom in your body is 14.5 billion years old, forged at the Big Bang. You contain 7 octillion atoms, mostly from exploding stars. You are literally stardust. Your salty blood recalls oceanic origins. Your spine structure was first developed by fish. Yet within this profound connection to everything, you remain utterly distinct. Your fingerprints, toe prints, and tongue prints will never be reproduced. Shame creates a terrible feeling of unworthiness residing in our bodies, the storehouse of memories and secrets. The word shame means to cover, reflecting our longing to hide even from ourselves. To avoid this excruciating feeling, we develop compulsive behaviors. Shame transforms small defects into overwhelming self-definitions. A difference becomes our entire identity. After one teacher shared childhood suffering in a book, Bob Thurman told her, "You should never be ashamed of the suffering you've been through." His teacher had told him after losing his eye, "You have lost one eye, but gained 1,000 eyes of wisdom." If we use our experiences to connect more deeply with ourselves and others, suffering can lead to wisdom. Love is recognition, seeing and being seen. When Ellen shared her parents' divorce story during a car ride, Gil pulled over to listen fully. This is love, mutual recognition that feels authentic. We must shed limiting cultural notions that love is a fixed ideal rather than a fluid verb, that romantic drama trumps sustainable connection, that love will rescue and complete us. Unlike Hollywood's portrayal of love as either perfect ecstasy or horrible heartbreak, real love can be quiet, peaceful, and good enough. When Samantha watched her mother clean her father after he wet his hospital bed, she realized love is defined by difficult acts of human compassion and generosity. Healthy relationships nourish us physically and mentally. Handholding during stress reduces fear, especially with someone we feel connected to. Micro moments of connection, sharing genuine positive feelings, synchronize heart rhythms, biochemistries, and neural firings between people. Early connections shape our relationship patterns. Secure caregiving creates secure attachment. Inconsistent care leads to anxiety or avoidance. These patterns aren't permanent. Through awareness and practice, we can develop secure attachment that allows presence without clinging or withdrawing. Modern neuroscience confirms we're wired for empathy. We have brain circuits dedicated to feeling with others. Yet too much empathy leads to burnout, while compassion involves concern and warmth that motivates helping without depleting us. Biases often stem from our own sense of deficiency, yet over 500 studies show that close friendships across group lines reduce prejudice through self-expansion. We incorporate aspects of our friends into our identity. Our neural empathy circuits don't always activate, especially when anxious or stressed. Compassion benefits both giver and receiver. It increases vagal tone, releases oxytocin, reduces inflammation, and strengthens immunity. Strong social relationships predict a 50% increased chance of longevity, with the greatest benefits coming from giving rather than receiving love. When suffering, we tend to withdraw, deepening disconnection. Reaching out, even when it requires enormous willpower, can be an act of self-compassion. Our daily moments of connection are the tiny engines that drive the upward spiral between positivity and health. When plans collapse or losses shatter us, we can choose anxiety or adventure. Saying yes to life frees our energy to be present, opening gateways to unimagined possibilities. Paying exquisite attention to a maple seed's intricacies, blue jay's sharp calls, or tension in your heart transforms rushed moments into cherished ones. Awe doesn't ask permission. It breaks through tedium with something bigger, whether a lilac's fragrance or a heartfelt gesture. After Jonathan's death, Rosemary felt unplugged from love's exchange, as if she'd fallen off a cliff. Through support groups and spiritual community, she gradually found her way. 3 years later, "It's as if all the love I gave to my husband can go out to the entire world." The rhythm of love, loss, grief, and embracing life again forms the tender pattern of our days. In opening to this rhythm, we find unshakable love, not in perfection or permanence, but in our willingness to show up, to feel, to connect. Real love isn't a feeling that arrives unbidden, but a practice we choose again and again.